Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we are talking about website design and maximizing the customer experience and the return on investment with Virginia Ingram, a digital strategist at Qubris. Now, Virginia works with a talented team at Qubris that I can vouch for to craft and design website solutions for each client in the Triangle and beyond. And at Qubris, you'll find her scouring the digital pathways and landscape for client-related insights. They don't just build a website that everyone can have. They build ones custom for you so that you understand and that they understand your business, your needs, and your customer. At Qubris, Virginia leads the marketing efforts. She's a blogger there. She also writes for the Huffington Post, and she confesses to being a full-fledged internet junkie. I got to ask her about that in a little bit. She is also an internet summit speaker. She's with South by Southwest Interactive Judging. She's a speaker there. She's on their advisory board. She just does so many things. She's focused on the entrepreneurial efforts of the internet and websites, and we're so lucky to have her here. And Qubris itself is local. They've been around for a number of years. I'm going to say six.
11.
11 now. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Time is flying.
I know.
And they do website design, and they partner with the client to create a lasting solution. And it's just not a flat website. It's three-dimensional. And you'll have to visit some of their examples of their work and see that. Some of their notable clients are Our State Magazine, Southern Seasons, Duke University, and many others. And Virginia, thank you so much for being on the show today. We have so much to learn, and I'm just going to let you start us out. Give us a little bit of a flavor for what you do and how you work with a customer.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and excited to be talking about the web and everything that you can do on the web. Like Lee mentioned, I am a full-fledged internet junkie. I have been in sort of digital strategy and production and just about every aspect of sort of getting things on the web for about 16 years. So it's definitely a hard
She started when she was five. We started the same
year. Yeah, exactly. So it's something that I think is really important, and I think that right now we're in such an exciting time in the web because things are changing so much and there's so much sort of going on. But at Qubris, what I mostly do is I work with the team as we get different projects and we work with different clients. We work to make sure that the website that we are going to produce for them solves the business problem that they have at hand. So a lot of what I'm doing is figuring out sort of what they need to accomplish and how to best communicate that. So sometimes that means a website and some marketing materials to help people get to the website, or a website and some social media recommendations to get people to the website.
So like things like Twitter feeds, Facebook, and then what kind of marketing materials, like business cards or what kind of things are that? Okay.
Yeah, we'll do full branding for clients.
Okay.
So that could mean, you know, starting with the name and coming up with the logo and the identity and then coming up with the business cards. But, you know, sometimes it could be a booth, like if you're
a trade show booth
or something, or it could be on occasion we'll do brochures.
Okay.
But,
what's
you know,
a brochure?
I know, exactly. A lot of that stuff's done online now.
Yes.
But just sort of figuring out different ways. Sometimes it's content marketing, just whatever makes the most sense for that client and whatever problem they're trying to solve. So
what's the first thing? I contact you, and let's say I'm a brand new business.
Yes.
And I don't have the logo. I have a name, but, you know, it's one of those corporate type names. Let's call it Joe Smith and Sons or something.
Uh-huh.
And we've put it out there, but we want to be different.
Right. Everybody wants to be different.
And so how do we sit down with you, and what does the conversation look like that first time we sit down with you?
Right. Well, what's great about that, starting out with a brand new business is a lot of fun. We actually just did that with Beer Durham, which is a growler refill store that's going to be opening up in Durham in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
But basically what we assume is that you're the expert on your business and you know what it is that you sell and you know how you fit in the marketplace. And so what we'll do, what we offer is we help to be an objective sort of bring an objective perspective.
Okay, you're the sounding board.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, are you when I describe it to you, is it in a way that people understand and they get it?
Exactly.
And those kind of things. Okay.
And so we're trying to understand how you think you're different, and then we'll go out and do a little bit of research to see how you are different.
Okay, so you're talking to potential customers, mm-hmm. the marketplace.
Yes.
Doing some frontline primary research, those yes. kind of things.
Yes, we rely on primary research and also secondary okay. research. Secondary research, of course, is research that we did not do ourselves. It's research that we just find that helps us understand sort of how a business fits in the marketplace.
So that particular industry, that mm-hmm. particular location, the businesses around yes. them. So like the economic development information from the various mm-hmm. county agencies or the state agencies, and then industry information.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And then we love to speak with different customers just so that we can understand sort of why someone maybe made a purchase decision or someone that might be a potential customer.
I'm brand new. I have no customers. Mm-hmm. I've got the name. I've incorporated. I'm sitting there. And I don't have a customer for you to talk to. So who do you talk to for that primary research?
So we'll find people that we think are going to be the customers.
Okay.
And then we'll talk to them about what it is that they provide. Another thing that can be great, because different budgets allow you to do right. different things, but you've got to do some research to understand sort of how everything is going to fit together.
It's part of that investment scenario. Why spend yes. $5,000 on a website that doesn't do and reach the customer you want?
Right.
Spend $10,000. Get that research. And yes, people, I said 10. and it's an investment. That's why yeah. we want to talk about maximizing that design. Those self-built ones are fine as a placeholder for a little while until you have the money to invest. But you really need to be dimensional. You need to have a customer experience when they come in. Mm-hmm. And part of that customer experience is making it specific to your customer base.
You can spend as much or as little as you want on a
right.
website. You can spend virtually nothing by getting your cousin to do it in his garage.
Or your junior high school
yes.
neighbor.
yes, yes. And we have worked with clients that are evolving right. away from things like that. I personally have worked on websites in my past
right.
That have been as much as $1 million.
Yeah.
So you can spend as much as you want. One of the first questions that we're going to have, we started out right. by talking about what it is that we're going to be sort of right. doing as we get started to help understand the client's business.
The next key question is, what is your budget?
Exactly. and sometimes people are afraid to give the budget because they are afraid that they're going to get a solution that's designed to that budget.
Right.
And yeah, you probably will. But it doesn't really do us any good if we don't know what your budget is and we design a solution that's $30,000.
And you have 10. Three, right.
Yeah, or
yeah,
whatever.
10, right.
And so, a range. I mean, our goal is not to spend your money. Our goal is to solve a problem
right.
with the resources that we have.
Right.
And
if you do have a $10,000 budget and you can do it for six,
mm-hmm.
you do it for six.
Exactly.
But if you have a $10,000 budget, there's so much you can do for that
right.
enhances that customer experience.
Right. And so much of what we're also trying to do is to learn about your organization and learn how the website is going to fit into your overall communication objectives
right.
and also into the work that your staff members are doing on a daily basis, because there's nothing more sad than a website that is intended to be updated frequently that is not.
Oh, okay. That finger's pointing at me.
It's at everybody.
Yeah. I used to literally, when we did the website for the company 12 years ago, what I told my website person was, I don't want to have to call you
right.
to put new content on. And
right.
back then, that was really unusual.
Yes.
He's like, well, I think we had 12 tools, and they were free tools, but they were cobbled together, and they worked really well for that
right.
point. But I would get a call from a reporter and say, do you have information on cash management? I said, well, it's coming up on the website tomorrow. And I'd sit down and I would write it that night, and I would send it to my editor. And can you turn this around really fast? And it was up the next day, so there would be 3 or 4 articles. And so that responsiveness,
mm-hmm.
that ability to put up an event, that ability to put new content
yep.
on. And it was a near, I would call it a near blog now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was constantly, every day I was changing the content.
Right.
If the front page didn't resonate, I'd change the front page. If the format,
Right.
And it was just, also because it was changed so frequently, it got higher and higher in the search engine stuff because
mm-hmm.
there was always new content.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get back to that.
Yes. Everybody, it's one of those things. It's like diet and exercise. Everybody feels like they could do a better job at it.
Yes.
So, you know, the main point is to figure out what realistically you think you can do.
Right.
And then figure out a way to maximize that as much as possible. So, you know, for someone that is doing a lot of blogging,
right,
it's, you know, figuring out, okay, that's great because that's going to help with a lot of search engine optimization and a lot of bringing traffic in.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, it'll help with getting the search engines to know that you're out there and make your results come higher.
Well, and it's, you know, content was what was bringing in the customers.
Exactly.
I mean, the website was the least expensive way for me to market my business,
right,
and generating content, which God bless me with the ability to generate content and writing things.
Right.
But getting it out there and getting articles out there and getting those cross links, and that just was so powerful that, you know, you couldn't pay for the amount of advertising or AdWords,
right,
or things that was being generated strictly on content and structure.
Right.
And how frequently it was getting updated.
And but that's something, that is something, sorry, that people are actually talking about a lot now. You hear the term content marketing. And content marketing is marketing through your brain.
Right.
You know, it's marketing through the content that you're already creating. So it's taking like these great radio show podcasts,
right,
that Lee has on her website, and then using those and reaching out to people. You know, it goes two ways. Like, you put it on your website, but just as much time as you spend creating the content, you want to be thinking about how you're going to distribute it.
Right.
So you're thinking about what social media channels make sense. You're working on different relationships. If it's a topic that you write about frequently, then lots of times you can find other outlets,
right,
that will then bring people back to your site. So content marketing is a big trend that we're seeing in the industry now because people are having such good luck with that.
I called it education marketing when I was doing it because I also found,
yes,
the more content I had out there and the more content on my website, the more, let's say, pre-sold,
yes,
a prospect was.
Yes.
So they already knew I knew the subject matter. They already knew the content was there. They had a feel for how I communicated,
yes,
because they were reading it. And so when someone would come in, whether it was from picking up something, an article or whatever, the sell and the close was such a shortened period of time because they already knew what they didn't know. They knew what I knew, and
yes,
they were comfortable with that.
And it helps you keep on top of your game.
Right.
Because if you are putting out content, people look at dates and they see how recently content's been updated. And so it forces you to do it. Lots of times at an organization, there's not one person that's generating content. And so having that date-stamped,
right,
content.
But that updating is really, mm-hmm, critical, which is what generating content is still not a problem. Getting it on the websites,
mm-hmm,
because again, I have multiple websites,
mm-hmm,
for different markets and different niches and different books and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that complexity also gets to me.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't need just a couple hours a week. You need several hours a week to make sure everything's heading in the right places.
Yep.
So let's talk about elements of a website.
Okay. Let's do that.
So walk us through what we need to be thinking about. So like navigation, look, all of those kind of things.
Okay. So there's a lot of sort of interesting trends that are happening right now that impact the different elements of websites and that sort of thing. So right now, I would say one of the biggest trends that we're seeing is instead of people developing a website for the internet or for computers only,
right,
they're designing responsive websites.
Which is what?
So responsive websites are websites that will look good on any device.
So your iPhone,
yes,
your iPad,
yes,
your Android, Blackberries if they're still around.
Yes.
Those kind of things, right?
Yeah, it'll look great on your computer, on your desktop, on your laptop. Lee and I both have really small laptops because we're mobile people that are
It's
got
to fit in the purse, and the
exactly.
purse has to be big enough to carry the computer.
Exactly. And so it used to be we would design websites, and we would design one for mobile, and we would design one for tablets, and we would design one for the web. That's too expensive because
right.
there's too many types of devices, and the devices are already changing. That's one thing that you can be certain of. Things on the web are
right.
going to change.
You buy something, and 6 months later, they come out with a new version,
right.
and the formatting's different and all those kind of things.
Right.
Yeah.
So with the environment being as disposable as it is, it is a tiny bit more of an investment to build out a responsive website than it would be to just build a website, but it's worth it.
But it's not building six websites.
Correct.
And so it's cheaper than building six.
Correct.
Right? So it's an investment. But I know when I go to websites and I see stuff cut off.
Yes.
Or it doesn't orient or it doesn't scroll because I love my iPad because it is a mini and it's smaller than even my laptops.
We're like technology twins.
I'm addicted to technology. So whenever we do that, it's very frustrating to try to get information. I know I was going to a restaurant yesterday and was looking at their menu or wanting to look at their menu, and the website wasn't working. And so when I came into the restaurant, I said, "Are you aware your website is not up and working?" And he's like, "No, you know," and so, you know, an SOS is going out. So why was his website not up and working, especially at one of the peak times for his business?
Right, right. And I think that actually touches on probably the next most. Okay. I mean, there's so many things that are important. It's not like I'm listing them in any sort of order, but I think that, you know, responsive web design is important because it allows your consumer to look at it in whatever environment they feel most comfortable. But, you know, in the example that you just talked about, this individual wasn't thinking about their customers first.
Well, it has to be up. It has to be the navigation has to be logical.
Yes.
And I'm going to say navigation has changed substantially from when I did it 12 years ago because navigation has become more intuitive with the new devices.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think 5-year-olds can sometimes navigate websites faster than 50-year-olds. And I'll speak for the 50-year-olds in the world. So, but you're watching that, and there is nothing more frustrating than going on a website and not being able to navigate it, or it's slow, or it has so many, I'm going to say flashy things, not meaning flash, but flashy things that don't add to the experience, don't add content. Yeah, they're fun to have, but when I get there, I don't have, you know, 60 minutes to try to find the stuff. I go to a website, I want to find it, and if it's not there, I'm gone.
Well, it's funny because website visitors, they can tell when they go to, you know, they can't necessarily put their exact finger on it, but they can tell when they go to a website and the website was designed by the company without considering them first.
Yes.
You know? Because, you know, if you're designing a website for a restaurant, you have to think about the fact that someone is probably on the go when they're making the decision to come to your restaurant. They're not sitting at home, you know, perfectly at their computer, making the plan 2 hours in advance. No, they're in the parking lot or they're driving down the road, you know, which they shouldn't be
doing. And so a client says, let's meet at this restaurant.
Right.
And for me, I have to be gluten-free and have all these food allergy type things that have happened in my old age. And so the first thing I have to do, because I don't want to spend the client's time sitting at the restaurant figuring out what I'm going to eat, is I hit the menus.
Yes.
And when restaurants don't have
it's
good
so
menus, it's like, well, you say you have a gluten-free menu, and I'm clicking, and nothing's happening. It's just really, you know, I'm turning around saying, telling the client, it's like, well, can we switch to a restaurant? Because I can't look at this menu, and, it, you know, maybe one right next door.
Right.
That the menu came up, and I can figure it out. And the client's like, of course, yes, we can do that. But that company, that restaurant lost a $50-$60 meal or more because there's usually 4 or 5 of us when we do a business meeting. And that's really sad that your website didn't bring your business in and actually kept business out.
Yeah. I mean, consumers aren't walking around all day thinking about how they can make you money.
No. You know?
They're not.
We wish they were.
I know.
But they just threw the money at us. But that's a reality. And what you're saying is what we say with marketing.
Mm-hmm.
We have to walk in our customer's shoes. We have to see through our customer's eyes. We have to talk about what they want to hear about, not what we want to tell them.
Right. Exactly. And that is the most important thing, and that's the biggest shift that we've seen in the internet in the past 16 years. We've gone away from a broadcast mode to a conversation mode. And so in addition to looking at responsiveness, looking at your navigation, and looking at what the customer might be thinking, their mindset when they approach the website, another really important thing for you to consider is social media. And that is how you're going to participate in that conversation, you know?
Right.
We have a tendency to focus, when you hear social media, we have a tendency to focus on the media part.
Right.
And not the social part. And so in order for it to be effective, that means that you can't just broadcast in most situations.
Right.
There are some situations where you can get by with just broadcasting. But in most situations, you need to be able to sort of participate in that conversation. And so if you're going to be going out on social media channels, just like how we were saying, you don't want your website to
be
not
static,
be updated and static. You need to be realistic about where your customers are and what makes the most sense for you.
And not only that, it's like, okay, if you're a chef, like the ladies on before us,
yes. So,
you know, sending a picture of your food or talking about that kind of thing, that kind of makes sense to the people that are following you. My clients and my followers are not waiting to see where I went to lunch and what I ate. they want to know what I think about the congressional hearings last night or things right. like that. So when we choose to interact in that social, it still has to be on message and on point.
Yes.
And not every social media outlet works for every company.
Exactly.
So we might do Twitter, which I do infrequently, but that's usually the primary one, Facebook. Right. Mm-hmm. I guess there's Instagram and all these other things now. But you have to understand what your customer is going to use and what they're not going to use, mm-hmm. and then make that decision with your website.
Yeah, we at Cubris, you know, we're helping our clients go through this, and so we're often helping them pick out which social media tools make the most sense for them. And so one of the things that we did was when we were working on our social media channels, we kept a lot of that information, that sort of decision making process, public.
Okay.
So that people could see why we made the decisions that we made.
And that's what your customer wants to see. I mean, that you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
And I tell my clients this. If you can't use what you do for your own business,
right,
then why would your customer want to use what you do for your business?
Right.
Right? And so being a website people and branding and messaging and all that kind of stuff, it makes absolute fantastic return on investment sense to share that process.
Right. And we use our... I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they think that all social media is the same and that they all behave the same, but they are very different.
Right.
But the way that people interact on Facebook is extremely different than the way that they interact on Twitter.
Right.
You know, it's totally different than Pinterest or Instagram. I mean, you can't even really do some of the same things that you
right.
can do on those. But it's really important to think about what makes the most sense. I mean, I know for us, what makes sense, of course, we use Twitter to converse. And
very well. I vouch for that, too.
Thank you. But we use it to meet people in the community and to find people that think like us and people that we can collaborate with and talk to and that sort of thing. You know, our Facebook feed is more about sort of letting people see what life is like at Cubris.
Right.
You know, like sometimes it'll be about our clients. Sometimes it's about us. And sometimes it is about the barbecue sandwich that we had for lunch that day. Because
that's the personal side. It's the personality.
Right.
And not the technical professional aspect. And we love seeing our companies we work with and knowing them as people too.
Yes.
Because that does reflect on how you're going to interact with us as customers.
You hire people, not companies.
Well, and talking about how we interact as customers, the other thing is color choices. Because I've mm-hmm. gone to some websites, and I remember with one client, they contracted it overseas, and we said earth tones, which, uh-huh. you know, that was their logo was earth tones. But it was funny because that when that got communicated, it came back blue and green, and I'm thinking, how does earth tones blue and green? But they were thinking when they see a picture from the outs from outer space in the
that's
world,
hilarious.
But it was again. Being able to communicate and right. understand, and that was a very expensive lesson in communication about that, because you don't think of
right.
communicating specifically. I'm talking browns and siennas and oranges and things mm-hmm. like that. But when it came back blue and green, I'm like, what did you tell them? They said earth tones. And I'm like, how do I get earth tones out of?
Right.
And then I'm thinking, okay, they took a picture from outer space and thought that meant earth tones.
Right.
And so it's a dynamic, but understanding too, when you're doing that branding and that imaging, mm-hmm. picking those colors for your logo, picking what's going to be attractive on the website for the customer. Mm-hmm. I'm old. I don't like gray print on websites. I don't like the reverse white and black either, too. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about those things, font
yeah.
size, layout,
yeah.
how much you use images, all mm-hmm. of those kind of things comes into that. That conversation.
It does. And fonts are getting bigger. It's
thank
really
God.
Interesting. I know. But it's so interesting. And I think it is because of the multiple ways that we access the internet.
Well, that and us baby boomers.
Probably
those of us with trifocals.
The baby boomers do have a tendency to start those different trends. But it's interesting. So, you know, what you mentioned in sort of color and making decisions about your business, I am, as we've already established, a dork. And so when I
are you a dork or a geek? I think I'm a geek.
I think I'm maybe a little bit of both.
Okay.
And a bit of a nerd too, and you know, just totally uncool. I have a lot of apps and stuff on my phone.
Yes.
And the way that I sort them is by color, because it's easy for me to think about, like, oh, Facebook's blue, Twitter's blue,
okay.
and a lot of the social apps,
right.
a lot of the social media apps are actually blue. And so it's interesting to see how you could be a differentiator.
Right.
Or fall in line.
Well, and it's, you know, it's funny because it's like book covers.
Yes.
Are the same way. So yes. Not this most recent book that's coming out, but the one before that, I thought, what color do I want it? And I go to the bookstore and I'm like, I'm seeing greens and blues and whites and blacks. And I'm like, I don't see anything orange.
Right.
So it was orange, right? And everybody's like, well, I said, well, it's energetic. It's a power color. People are going to notice it on the shelf because amongst all of the earth tones. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you make those decisions, but I wouldn't do an orange website. Okay, Orange Theory, I think their website is orange. But for what I do, orange is kind of clashing for the business side.
Yeah.
And so that kind
orange
of matching.
Orange is kind of fun.
It's fun. I don't want to say hip. I don't think hip is a word anymore. But it's something that's energetic. And for the right type of book or the right website, that's fine. But if I'm finance.
Right.
Orange is not what I expect to see.
Right.
Well, and I won't name the bank, but when I saw them putting up red and yellow signs, I thought stop signs and caution signs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think that's what I want associated with a brand.
Right.
But it might work for a construction company.
Right.
And so those are the kind of things you're having conversations about as you're doing design work.
Yep.
And the reaction it's going to get from the customer.
Yeah. And that goes right back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, you're planning out what if you're a brand new business and you're approaching a company like Cuperus to help you come up with how you're going to be represented on the web or in marketing materials or anything like that, you have to look at what it is that you want to communicate. And then you also have to look at that competitive landscape so that you can understand, so that you're purposeful in your decisions. You haven't just picked orange because you like it. You've picked it because it's similar or different than other people that are out there. And you have to let that fit in with your corporate culture.
Well, also, when we make choices for the customer coming in, if the website is jarring, I'm not going to be able to stay on it as long as I want to get the information. And so when you're thinking about that in the design, I know a company I used to work with, they thought they were being revolutionary. They put this real – and I guess it was – but what they put on was so disjointed or jarring that when you came on the site, everybody was immediately clicking off because it was an image that didn't bring somebody in. It was almost like a take a picture of somebody, chop it up, and just kind of scatter it and then ask somebody what it was. And that was really not what they intended to be, but when the customer looked at it, we couldn't stay there. And so we really have to have those conversations, and that's what you're talking about. You're the objective person. I bring an image to you, and you're saying, well, you know, that might not work because of this.
Right, right. So you understand your business, and we're helping you take that information that you know about your business, and we're taking what we know about the web and communicating and marketing, and we're applying that together. So much of what has to happen has to be a two-way street.
And what's this how long does the design process take from that first conversation?
It depends. It's like budgets,
right?
You know, solutions can be designed. I would say,
but it's not one meeting for design and getting the information. It's several meetings over weeks.
Yes. I won't speak in actual days because our project managers
would kill me.
Yes. But I will say that, you know, we're going to have some foundation meetings where we understand your business. Then we're probably going to present back to you to show you that we understood that your business and that we understand some strategies and stuff and sort of tell you what our recommendations are and make sure we're on the same page.
And get clarification if there's any gaps. Okay.
Exactly. Then we'll go and we generally start with like wireframes, which are wireframes are just like they're almost like hand-drawn sketches.
Okay.
And those are ways that you can illustrate what's going to be on the page.
Storyboards is what we used to call them in the old days.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So you storyboard the cartoon, the layouts, all of those kind of things.
Yeah, it's saying what's going to be on all the pages so that before we get to design and actually start looking at different looks and feels, we know what's going to be on the page. Because if you don't do that, then you design a couple different versions and maybe the information that's on the website is different and then people might be making a decision based on something different. Like they might be making a decision based on what's on the site, not what makes the most visual sense for their business.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And get thanks to our underwriters and talk about a few of our nonprofits. And then when we get back, we're going to continue our conversation about websites and maximizing their impact with Virginia Ingram of Cubris. Well, we're back, and you're listening to Focus on Business on WCOM FM. And our guest today is Virginia Ingram of Cubris, and we are talking about websites and maximizing our client experience and that. So we were talking about different pages. Mm-hmm. So let's think about that. How many pages are like the minimum normally that we set up just to get started?
Well, so that's a good question.
And it depends, I know.
Everything depends. I mean, that's actually, I think, one of the most frustrating things when you're talking with a client that, you know, is getting started is you have to be able to be okay with the answer, it depends. But the reason why I was saying that was an interesting question is because there's a new trend in the web where you're starting to see things be on one long page.
Ooh.
And that's actually
Scroll Town.
It is Scroll Town. But the thing that's actually interesting about it is that Scroll Town is kind of difficult when you're on a computer, but it's very easy when you're on a tablet
right.
or a phone. And so if your site's responsive and if you are able to be succinct
right.
with the information, then it's absolutely appropriate.
Well, I mean, we had long scroll pages when I started my website 12 years ago.
Yes.
And that was so awkward for everyone. So
yes.
we went to static length pages.
Yes.
And when we moved to the website, I'm going to say it's been about 6 years ago, I ended up the number of pages because each mm-hmm. article became a page and
yes.
just the way the structuring was. I had something like 4,500 pages to the
That's
website.
That's not surprising. You're very prolific.
And so it was kind of scary for,
yes.
you know, because they're like, well, we can't move all your content. I said, you have to move all the content.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, if we dropped, I was like, no, the whole point. I need more space, but I don't want to lose content.
Right.
And now the structures are more dynamic and those mm-hmm. kind of things. But it's still, if I looked back at it, it's probably 10,000 pages at this point when you look at all the content
so
behind
much.
It.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting point. The way that we did websites, I would say 6 years ago, was you would design the website and you would design the content right into it.
Right.
And so now, as more and more people have content management systems like you have
right.
on your website, what that does is it helps you keep the look and feel of the website separate from the content. So you can oftentimes fairly easily change out the look and feel of your website without having it impact your content.
Right.
Couldn't do that a few years ago. So that's a big thing. So your question was, what are the, sort of the basic things
Wait,
you need to have?
About us.
About us. Contact.
Okay.
You need to have sort of what it is that you do.
Right.
You know, what it is that you offer people. And that can be different
right.
than about us.
Right.
You know?
It usually should be because it should be about the customer and what the customer
exactly.
gets.
Exactly.
Where about us tells you the history, who's there, those kind of things.
That's you're proving.
It's truly about us.
Yeah.
But the other thing is what the client needs to know from
the
their
benefit.
From their shoes. Their eyes, their needs.
Right, right. The benefit. And another thing that's helpful is case studies, you know. And of course, it depends. I mean, at a restaurant, you're not going to have a case study, you know. But, you know, you're going to have menus. Like, you know,
right.
there's different things. I mean, there's always something. It's like thinking about what is going to give you the most validity to your customer. And then you want to make sure you have an example of that.
I know when I sat down and we were doing the redesign for the website, I went out to look what other consulting companies
yes.
had done, and then realized that really wasn't what I wanted to benchmark against because my consulting company doesn't operate like the big guys
right.
or the structures, and we're really content-driven, customized,
mm-hmm.
and scalable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, Accenture, and mm-hmm. what their website was doing while I compete against them is not the dynamic of the customer I want to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
And so even realizing what you don't want to do is as important as what you want to do.
Yep, yep. And so oftentimes it's important when I know we have a partner, Nomacork. They're one of our great clients. And when they came to us sort of with the idea of starting the website, they had done so much homework.
Right.
And it was great because we were able to jump in and have a really good sort of conversation. And we were able to apply what we know to their business. But they had also done a lot of that too. I know that, you know, they make these synthetic corks,
right.
you know, that help like they keep have, your right. yeah yeah.
They have a lot of uses, and we love them.
Yeah, they do. They're fantastic, and they have their plant out in Zebulon. They had examples of websites. They deal with a lot of companies internationally, and they had ways of dealing with sort of franchisees, sort of.
Right.
They were looking at Exxon for the way that Exxon was getting that information across, which is completely out of their category, but it was the same kind of problem.
Right, and that's when we're out there, we have to think outside yes. of the box, especially if you're not I'm going to call them a set box, right. defined structure, a gas station. It's not necessarily going to be different from any other gas station.
Right.
But if you're a consulting firm, if you're right. a Nomacork, if you're a restaurant, we know certain things people want to see and expect to see those. And if they're not there, they're off your page.
Yep.
But then there's the things that make you you mm-hmm. and how you do business. And that's why I say you have to look beyond what your competitors are doing. Like they went to Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
You might go to, you know, Ford Motor Company's website to get something else because
right.
of how they do with supporting the dealers or something. But it's looking for how you want to do your business and mm-hmm. communicate. And that means scouring the websites that are already out there mm-hmm. for the best.
Exactly. Exactly. You always want to be able to differentiate yourself from your customers, but you want to learn from best practices wherever you find best practices. They are not always in your industry.
Yes. So we've got about us. We've got what the customer needs to know about mm-hmm. the benefits, how to contact us, mm-hmm. how to hire us.
Yes.
service information mm-hmm. and those kind of things. And our social media,
mm-hmm.
way to contact us with social media.
Yep. Yep.
So we've got this basic structure. We've gotten a budget. We're mm-hmm. talking about all of these things that we're going to put out there. But again, we're new.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get the first people to come to those websites?
So that's a really great question, and it's different for a lot of people. I know I'll use Beer Durham again as an example. Durham, they're in Durham.
Right.
Beer Durham.
Right.
Durham,
North Carolina.
Yes, Durham, North Carolina. Durham, North Carolina is a very social town.
Right.
They do a lot on social media. A lot of the restaurants and stuff are on social media. And so a lot of what we were doing was looking at who was on social media and finding people to start talking with and stuff. And they haven't opened yet, but they're already having a lot of those conversations.
Right.
And a lot of that is to build excitement. So for them, one of the things that makes a lot of sense is social media.
Mm-hmm.
For
both aspects, the broadcasting and the social aspect.
Exactly, exactly. They're good conversers. So they're a lot of fun online. So that's great. But, you know, some clients, that's not really the way to go. We have another client who they're not doing a lot on social media because a lot of what they're doing is actually they'll go to different trade shows.
Right.
And we will make different websites to support
that
the trade show.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that when the salesperson is having a conversation at this trade show that's very specific,
right,
they will then be able to refer them to a website that has very specific information.
It's like you're micro-niching websites.
It is. It is. And probably 90% of the information is the same, but that 10% of information that's different based on the different trade shows
right.
is what will make the sale happen.
Right.
You know, because so it's showing that you understand the person's business.
Right. And you're customizing, again, to mm-hmm. that specific client base.
Yes.
And so it's worth that additional investment. Do they I'm assuming they use multiple domain names then and things like that, too.
They may not. They don't actually use multiple domain names, but they'll use different structures. So
okay.
it may be the client's PlotWatt. And so it may be that it's like, you know, PlotWatt.com/something else,
okay.
you know. So that's the way that they're able to sort of keep that straight. But you could do different domain names. Of course, the more websites you have, as
the more complexity you have. It's like
yeah.
terrible.
Yeah, it gets hard. And so, you know, you just want to make it as easy for you to be able to manage it. And so it's just being realistic.
What about, I mean, I've been at events now. They're trying to use more event apps.
Yes.
And specific to drive, you know, collect the emails, collect the contact information. How does that normally interact with even with the websites for those events and things like that?
So, I mean, that's a really good question because that is an area where we're seeing a lot of movement. I know that there are whole companies that are based on just helping people have a good conference experience and
mm-hmm.
then helping continue that conference experience afterwards. In this industry, they're not doing a lot of that. So it's not something that we've had to integrate for this particular client. But what you'll see, for example, you know, South by Southwest, which you mentioned, is an organization that I do a lot of work with.
And explain what that is for people who don't know.
South by Southwest is a conference that happens in Austin, Texas every March. And it is one of the very biggest interactive conferences that happens in the world. They have interactive. They also have music. They also have film. And they sort of look at that convergence of all of those different things.
So it's a convergence of technology, social media, entertainment, education. It's an active, innovative environment.
Yeah, very innovative. So it's people that are creating and people that are enjoying things that people are creating. And, you know, they do – there is no specific conference app when you go to South by Southwest. Okay. Like, they have an app that, like, allows you to see sort of the events that are happening. Right. But so much of what's happening at South by Southwest is what happens in the hallways when you meet people.
Right.
And so what is really important to remember when you're sort of crafting these experiences and these environments is that there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen on the internet.
Right.
But you got to pay attention to what's happening offline.
In front of you. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and the events that we've had, the apps have not been that successful because also before people came to the event, it was kind of funny, one of the events I did, I seemed to be the first booth everybody landed at that had the Q codes and QR codes. And so I was having seats in my booth for people to sit down and me to walk them through, you know, installing the app on their phone or how did it work. And
so you were doing tech support.
I was doing tech support, you know, and which was fine because you get good conversations and stuff too. But realizing people didn't understand what to do, that they needed the app before they arrived.
Yeah.
And then the people in most of the booths didn't understand the app either. And so it was really challenging for most people. And then there were glitches, of course, the first time somebody does a new app, those kind of things. And so realizing that you can lose experience by frustrating the customer that comes into those events, too.
Yeah.
And you're forgetting that they may not be familiar with us old guys. may not be as comfortable using our smartphones to log in and share information and those kind of things. So you need both types of experiences.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, this is when, like, hashtags are helpful and things like that.
Explain a hashtag.
So a hashtag is the pound sign and then, like, you know, some words that you would use to then be able to search. So
on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yes.
Or on Instagram or on Facebook now.
Okay.
Lots of times, like a conference that's notable that's in the Triangle area is one that's put on by the Triangle chapter of the American Marketing Association.
Okay.
They put on one that's called High Five. And you find people that are searching. Whenever they post something, they'll use
the
pound sign and then High Five. And then you can find people that are talking about things. So that's really helpful. Internet Summit. Which is another conference.
Right.
It was started here in Raleigh, and now they have like six or seven different ones around the U.S. And they do some hashtags, and they'll do some hashtags for like different sessions.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually had an app that was really good. They used Feather, which is a whole business that's been built around this. And what Feather does is it allows you to if you're a conference registrant, then you can link your LinkedIn account, your Twitter account, your Facebook account, whatever social media accounts you have.
Right.
And then if you meet someone and you find their profile, you can save it.
Okay.
And then you have different ways to contact them.
Well, I know. I go to events and I have a short attention span. I hate to admit that. But if I want to stay engaged, I sit there and I tweet.
Yes.
Or that. And it was kind of an interesting dynamic. I did one at one of the aerospace conferences, national conferences.
That's a really cool conference.
And it was kind of funny because you would think technology-wise, someone would have been sitting there with the conference doing stuff. And I started getting all these LinkedIn invitations and things piling up in my inbox because other people were there and I was tweeting about, you know, what this was said and different people speaking and then tweeting their company's Twitter hands. And it was this really interesting dynamic. And somebody came over, they started looking for who was doing this. And they found me. I said, well, how long have you been with the conference? I said, oh, I'm an attendee, right? But if you're going to do it with conferences, if you're going to be aware, if you want to make those connections and maximize the impact, you really need to be aware.
Yeah.
And for me, for my business, it was better. I met more people because I was tweeting the event than if I had been going around booth to booth.
Yes. Absolutely. And actually, you are able to meet them later when you have a time, like when you've are able to stop learning.
Right.
You know, you can focus on the conference. You can use sort of Twitter or whatever almost as like a way of taking notes.
Right.
And then you can follow back up with people afterwards.
Well, and because they were immediately following me.
Yeah.
And then they were, you know, and it was like you could tell there was a dynamic going on at mm-hmm. their home offices or whatever because those mentions were coming up and you knew the speaker wasn't doing it. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there and you're watching that dynamic that then made them land on my website, that, mm-hmm. which made them reach out. And because you've already helped them get visibility, there's mm-hmm. a different dynamic there.
Yeah.
And so you've got more credibility the more connected you are and the more wisely tweeting.
Yes.
Selectively tweeting and then including some kind of comment and things with it. It's hard to do in 140 characters.
It is hard, but you figure it out.
You figure it out. I am not good at abbreviating, though. So, you know, you do a series of them. And so it's really a dynamic because I think I connected at a higher level mm-hmm. and got more people to hit the website than if I had even sponsored the event and had right. a booth there. And so that's things we have to realize, that investing that money that I might have done for a sponsorship or a trade show booth mm-hmm. or something, invested in my website has an ongoing return if I'm doing things properly.
Mm-hmm.
Not that just one-time hit that I may or may not get a good customer out of, mm-hmm. where if I make that connection on social media, I route them back to my trade show booth as being my website,
mm-hmm.
that makes a different impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've got like 5 minutes left, so okay. I want to give...
Man, that went fast.
Oh, I know, it always does. Good guess. You know, time flies when we're having fun. Let's give them some tips.
Okay.
Of one, how to talk.
Okay.
On the first time they come in, what do they need to bring in?
Mm-hmm.
And what should they do as their homework
okay.
before you come in?
Okay. So I would say there are a couple things that are really important to do that, you know, we've used the sort of diet and exercise example already. We're all not always very good at that. I think that understanding how you can communicate on social media and what you can do with that is really important. It's also really important to look at your analytics.
What are analytics?
So analytics, lots of people are using Google Analytics, but you could be using something that, like Kissmetrics or something like that, that you pay to use on a monthly basis. But there's something that code that you install on your website that allows you to see how people are using your website.
So it's how many people came.
Yes.
How long they stayed.
And what they did.
What pages they hit.
Yep.
Those kind of things.
Yeah. So when you know, when you're looking at your analytics, you're looking at what your customers are doing on social media,
mm-hmm.
you have a really good idea of how people are using you currently.
Okay.
So when you come to meet with us or come to meet with any agency, any good agency is going to want to start with those things. What you will then want to do is start to look at what you could mean to those customers.
Okay. So because, if somebody lands, I say I get a lot of people coming.
Yes.
But they're there 30 seconds and they go.
So
that
a
tells
problem.
You something. Yeah. On that landing page, you're not connecting. You're not giving them what they need. We need to change that.
Right. So we're going to look at a few key things. We're going to look at your bounce rate, which is exactly that. When someone comes, how long they stay, how many pages they go to. A high page count is interesting because sometimes you have a high page count if people can't find what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have a high page count
because they are finding what they want.
Exactly. Yeah. They're so enraptured with the content that you have. So we're going to look at how all of those things sort of fit together. I think another really important thing when you're having those initial conversations is knowing what it is that you want to accomplish with the website.
So if I just want to put out information and have it as a resource, it's different than if I want it to be my brochure to get customers to come in and call me.
Right.
That call to action.
Exactly. If it's a lead generation website, then we're going to want to have something to capture those leads.
Right.
You know? So it's looking at sort of what those different things are. I know when we worked with Our State magazine, you know, they so much of what they're doing is having people have a nice respite, you know.
Right, like
a
nice experience. Place. The experience of coming in, getting information, enjoying the content.
Yeah.
And wanting to come back again.
So we've worked with them to make little microsites to help support specific issues and help people get that and have that experience. And we've done those things as sort of experiments because it's a big sort of change in the industry. So that's something that they're doing that, you know, sets them apart from other people. And it's something that, you know, that wouldn't have been what they wanted to try 2 years ago.
Right.
So it's looking at sort of what your how adaptable you are, right. really. I mean, maybe that's not really the right words, but, you know.
Well, how scalable, how evolving you are, yeah. how current, how engaged, how concerned you are yeah. with your customer.
And just, like, what your tolerance for change is. Like, do you want to be like everybody else but better? Or do you want to swim differently? You want to swim against the current, you right. know? And so knowing how people are currently using your website and then knowing what you want to do moving forward will help us work with you to come up with the right solution.
Right. I mean, for when I started out, having hundreds of articles and content on there was great, again, to demonstrate, to educate marketing, yeah. to content market. And that made a huge difference and made that ramp up of getting the first customers, first paying customers, mm-hmm. Coming in. That was hugely different. And now that people are shifting and, as we're saying, everybody's becoming aware of content marketing, you now have to do something different to make that content right. more accessible, more timely, more visible, all mm-hmm. of those kind of things.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So another tip. What should we tell you about where we're going?
So this is actually really important just because it's another trend that we're seeing overall on the internet. So the internet has been very great in helping us parse words, helping us find things through okay. content marketing, right. you know, like using search and optimization and stuff. The web is getting more and more visual, and that's really good.
Okay.
It's good because it allows us to, again, get information apart or get information out there pretty quickly and stuff. So things that people are using a lot of are things like infographics and things like that. And
Explain that.
So infographics are, it could be something that is explaining a very complicated process, but it's doing it with visuals.
So a diagram, a yeah. flow chart, mm-hmm. things that communicate a lot of information in a short or a limited space, mm-hmm. succinct manner.
Yes.
So getting back to the pictures worth a thousand words type production of content.
Yeah, and there's so much, and people are consuming so much information, pictures stand out. And if it's a picture that's useful, then it's going to stand out even more, you know?
Yeah, and it's, again, when we choose those words, so for me, my website it's in English, but it needs to translate well
yes.
for clients outside of the country. And so I always have to be conscious of which words I choose. So
right.
One of the things if I know it's going to be a translated article or content, I avoid using the words bottom line instead of profitability.
Right.
Because bottom line does not translate well in most languages.
Right.
And it's making those conscious awareness of not just being U.S. English centric in making choices.
Right.
And making sure we can translate. And I mean, my content I was really big in Singapore there for a while because English speaking, the content was there and it was written in such a way that it translated well, and people who English was not as a primary language or was but not U.S. English needed to be able to get that information, and it was readily available.
Yeah.
And so you start seeing those little trends, and then you have to look at your analytics and say, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't even know what, you know, it wasn't .com everybody was sending. I was like, .si, it's not Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And so I was calling my web guys like, the analytics say I have like 200 new subscribers from, he goes, Singapore. I looked and I was like, and so it was an interesting dynamic that you can adjust your content and know what's resonating mm-hmm. with different customer bases and different locations and things too.
Yep.
Well, let's give them your call out information. You're at JinJin
uh-huh.
on Twitter.
Yes, JinJin.
Mm-hmm. And at Cubris.
Yes,
is the company.
Cubris.
Your website is?
The Cubris website is cubris.com, so cubris.com.
And if they want to reach out to you, email you?
Yes, you can totally email me. My email address is virginia@cubris.com. So send me a note. I love to chat.
She is very social and very socially media adept. So thank you guys for tuning in today. And until next week, stay focused on the important things in life.